And tonight's speaker comes to us from the Freedom Group in Gainesville. Having gotten sober in 2014, he is active in his home group, maintains a service position, and I bet I can guess at least one interest he's had in his recovery.
With that, we have Wesley.
Hey everybody, I'm Wes. I'm an alcoholic. I appreciate the invitation. You know, Tim came to our clubhouse back in June, and he was our keynote speaker for the Hall Club, the house up in Gainesville, for our like 42nd anniversary, whatever number it was. He was our keynote speaker, and he kind of asked me after his lead that night if I would consider doing this. And I was always kind of taught that if you are able to do it, you should do it in recovery. And, you know, we're from Gainesville, the big group of us back there. Most of us are from up the road. And, you know, I mean, it's not like it's too far, but it's just far enough to where you kind of think about it for a second. You're like, yeah, I think I can do that. And then he saved it by saying it'll be in September. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. That gives me some time to kind of, you know, figure out my schedule, figure out what's going on to make it down here. But I am happy to be here. I've been here once before for just an afternoon or a noon meeting. One of the other guys that's in ARM, if you can't tell, we're a biker group. It stands for the Association of Recovering Motorcyclists. And y'all had a home group member here that was also in ARM that we came down for one of his celebrations. And, you know, so I've been here before, so it feels very familiar. It's very nice to be back. Like Alex said, I got sober. It was August 17th of 2014. That's a day that I can remember pretty easily. It was a watershed moment in my life, I suppose. You know, there was the life before and the life after. And I know that from up at this podium, I'll try to respect the podium, try to keep it just to alcohol. Obviously, like most of my peers that I know and talk to, there are other substances involved in my story, and I have no qualms about this program being beneficial for all problems of the mind and addiction. I rely on this program for all troubles in life. There is some of that in my story. I like to cuss, and I'll probably not want to use that language up here. My five-year-old's back there, but he has headphones and a tablet, so he probably, the building could be on fire, and he probably would not notice. So we're safe there. But, you know, I get to tell y'all what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now. So just a quick little back qualification time. Born December 15th, 1981. That puts me at 43 years. I'll be 44 this December. Childhood was not normal. You know, I think so often I hear alcoholics say that their childhood was normal, and I think to myself, you know, my childhood was normal for me. You know, it's what I knew. I look back at it now, and I see that there was alcoholism involved in my life from day one. I'm the son of an alcoholic. I'm the son of a very codependent, very in need of Al-Anon mother. They did not stay together for very long. They separated before I even had real memory. I mean, I think I was maybe four when they got divorced. So I have a brother. He's 2 years older than me. So from that point four onward, we would do like a week at mom's house and then a week at dad's house. And it was chaotic. That, you know, I think for me is a root area where I learned to like manipulate, because I could get away with stuff at my mom's house that I would never try at my dad's house. And then he wasn't always the most attentive, so there were things that I could do over there that I would not be able to do with a mother who's helicoptering around, you know, watching our every move. So, you know, I learned early on that you could manipulate situations to your advantage. And again, that's not anything I realized before I came to y'all, but it's something I can look back and see that, no, my childhood was not normal. But I'm reassured and learned that, like, I don't think anyone's is. Early on in school, I was not very good. In school, I had some learning troubles, some dyslexia, and some other learning disabilities that I received some help from the school counselor or whatever, and then you go to, like, the special needs class or whatever one period a day, and they let you cheat on your homework. That's what I did there. I cheated on my homework. I got to come for certain tests that I didn't think I would do well in, like biology and math tests. They would let me go into that room, and you know, I got to cheat on them, essentially. That's not what you were supposed to do, but that's what I did. To the best of my ability, I took advantage of that program as much as I could. Somewhere in middle school, I discovered that certain people had weed, and I started doing that pretty early on, stealing cigarettes from the gas station, My first drink of alcohol, I don't honestly remember my first drink. I remember my first drunk. It was over at a spend the night party. We got into his dad's liquor cabinet, and he had some Southern Comfort, and he had some whiskey and some other things. But my first drunk was Southern Comfort. I don't remember having that feeling of head to toe, feeling different, all of the things that I hear. I just remember looking back at it that I wanted to do it again as soon as possible. And I couldn't put my finger on why. There was a big need to fit in, and there was a perception that that crowd that was into that stuff was my crowd, if you will. And I desperately just wanted to be a part of something. So that's the crowd that I got in with, was the stoners and the drunks and the skaters and, you know, all of the above. You know, through high school, again, still cheating my way through high school, essentially, we moved on to harder substances, more alcohol, more house parties, more trouble. Trouble with the law, and nothing really serious, nothing that stuck, but just run-ins here and there. I don't think I remember one time, you know, the drug dogs came to the school and they spotted my car, and I got called out of class, and the police officers are over there scraping carpet fibers and shaking little vials of fluid up in the air, like, you know, checking it to the sunlight to see what the hell I guess it was reading, and just this big show that scared the ever-loving crap out of me. Like, it scared me. Like, I thought I was going to go to jail for some carpet fibers, some, you know, whatever they found. Had some Visine. They wanted to know what that was all about. Told them I had contacts in. They said, it says you're not supposed to use this for contacts. I said, you know, just whatever. It was just, they were shaking me down. They were trying to see if I could say, well, you didn't catch something on me, but X, Y, and Z over there, those are the two you need to go look at. You know, that didn't happen, and nothing came of it other than them calling my parents. But, you know, it was one of those near misses, and my story is full of near misses. The only time I was ever actually arrested was when I was 19. I was leaving a buddy's house at 2 a.m., and I was driving only like, you know, this is how these stories go. It was only like 3 miles I had to travel down a main road, and then it was back roads, and it was like that 3-mile stretch of on the main road they got behind me, and as I turned into my neighborhood to the back roads, they flagged me, they pulled me over, and they got me for underage consumption and for possession of marijuana, and we fought the case, and I got, you know, a conditional discharge, which is great for a 19-year-old. I think a first-time offender for a small possession weed charge and a little bit of alcohol on their breath, you shouldn't get the book thrown at you for something like that when you're doing what I perceive as a natural progression in lives, to experiment. The problem with me is that the experimentation just kept going and going and going. It wasn't just this is scaring me, I got arrested for this, let's not do this again kind of thing. Out of high school, I started working in the restaurant industry. I worked over at a restaurant real close to my house. It was a Ruby Tuesdays in Gainesville. It's not there anymore, so I can talk about it. I'm not like Ruby Tuesdays is anonymous or anything, but it doesn't exist anymore, so I don't have to keep it kind of covert. You know, I started working at a Ruby Tuesdays, and there were people. I was, you know, actually, I guess I started that job while I was still in school. But I started working full time out of high school, and you know there were people that worked there. They were kids. You know, I'm 43 now, and looking back at it, these were like, you know, 24-year-olds, 25-year-olds working over there, and you know they were some of my early idols, man, because they had the things that I wanted, and they were happy to hand it to me, to let me go do what I needed to do in the bathroom. They were happy to let me have any of the bar drinks that I wanted throughout the shift. And I was able to really kind of drink and use there freely. And that was the first time I had ever felt that I wasn't being judged for anything. I was able to just drink and use the way Wes wanted to drink and use. And I did for a few years there. You know, the restaurant industry for me was just that. It was a no-holds bar. You can get away with anything because it's got a low bottom of what they'll tolerate as far as, or maybe that's a high bar. I don't know. It takes a lot to get fired from most restaurants if you show up for the scheduled shift and you're halfway able to do what they need you to do. That's been my experience in it. So I was in restaurants for like 17 years, so I'm certainly not knocking it as an industry, but I was able to get away with what I wanted to get away with there. and hide in the masses, if you will. Somewhere in all of that turmoil of the life I was living, drinking and doing these other substances daily, I got involved with a woman and we got married. I'm going to speed this up because, you know, we've all heard these stories, right? We got married. We were married for several years, and eventually she was fed up with the way I was living and what I was doing. And she kicked me out of the house, said she wanted a divorce. And I realized, in probably a very nice moment of clarity, that, like, I don't have to keep doing this. My father had gotten sober when I was 10 years old, and my brother and I were drugged, much like that five-year-old there, drugged to AA and Al-Anon meetings and Alateen meetings and conventions down in Macon and, you know, all of these things that I perceived that we were being drugged to. We had the opportunity to be exposed to this lifestyle at a young age. And I knew who to call when I had that realization that one day that, you know, I don't have to add to this story anymore. You know, I've proven to myself enough that I'm an alcoholic. You know, I came in here thinking that I only really had a drug problem. Pretty soon after that first meeting, I realized that, you know, alcohol is a drug, and it encompasses everything. With her, you know, doing all of that, I called my father, and he's definitely one of us. You know, he was on a road trip with my stepmom over in South Dakota, and I called him, and I told him that I was done. I said, you know, this and this has happened, and I'm done with all of this. And he said, well, what you do is you go to the Halt Club, you pick up a white chip, and you go back tomorrow. And so he kind of 12-stepped me, just as he would any other alcoholic, just as hopefully any of us would if someone called and said, I'm done, because we know the answer, and the answer is here. And it's a simple answer. It's come in, pick up a white chip, and then repeat it, come back tomorrow. Initially, that's the only answer that I could understand. If you hit me with doing 12-step work and speaking and service positions and prayer life and meditation and inventories and all of that big, big, higher level AA stuff, I don't know what I would have thought, but I could come in, I could admit, and I could repeat that. And so that was the first AA advice I ever got, was just keep coming back. And he said another thing. He said, you know, pay attention to what's similar, not what's different. And so those are the two first pieces of AA advice I ever got. And they're some of my favorite advice to give newcomers when they come in, because it's so simple. Coming in and being new to sobriety, I could tell that something was different. I'm one of those guys that up until this point, 11 years and 2 months or a month later, I haven't picked up another white chip. You know, because my life was different from coming here. And, you know, I think about that a lot. We share a lot. Our home group, the Freedom Group, meets 7 nights a week. I'm going to say 8 nights a week, but that's not appropriate. But meets 7 nights a week at 8 p.m. And in our little readings, they say, you know, solution-oriented discussion meeting, or our speaker meeting has a different little intro thing, but like solution-oriented. You know, so I was hearing the solution at the meetings, and, you know, you guys were telling me that if I wanted what y'all had, I had to do what you did, and you were saying things like, get a sponsor. I didn't honestly know what that looked like either. Somewhere in that second or third week of coming up there, my father introduced me to my sponsor. He's here tonight. He and I have been working this program for a really long time together. I'd love to say that the work is near completion, but we met today and talked for an hour on the phone today. And I can tell you just from that phone call, the work is not anywhere near completion. This is a road that I choose to trudge. I choose to be here and trudge it with y'all, to walk with that purpose of this AA way of life, because it's given me a life today. You know, I came in with that marriage falling apart, no formal education beyond high school, and I had no real kind of plan for what my life was going to look like when I age. And for me, that's the business I'm in now is such an important component of what I see daily. I'm an ICU nurse over at our local hospital system over in Hall County, Northeast Georgia Medical System. And I'm an ICU nurse over there now. I see people that are at the end of their life. I see people that are in the middle of their life, people that are young in life, from things that was in their control to things that wasn't in their control. And I see alcoholics and drug addicts and, you know, all of the things you can imagine that you see in that environment. I deal with that on a daily basis, and I bring this program with me every day to that occupation. And that doesn't mean that I 12-step every person who comes in jaundiced from alcoholism. In fact, I don't do that. But if that door is opened in the conversation that I have with them, it's a perfect opportunity for me to at least say to them that, hey, on August 17th of 2014, I picked up a white chip and I haven't had to drink or do what you're doing, whatever substance that may be, in that amount of time since then. And if they ask what I did, then I can at least tell them the simple fact is I go to AA and I do what they tell me to do. I've become obedient to working these steps. And that's a big term for me, is obedient to it. I am. You know, I have to live this way of life. I certainly don't always want to live the AA way of life. I don't always want to do what's right. I don't always want to go to meetings. I don't always have time to go to meetings. But I have to make time for it. You know, and I do. I have to. Because you guys tell me that it ain't getting any better out there. And when you come back in and I say, what happened? Usually the first thing you say is, either I got into a relationship, and then the second thing is I stopped going to meetings. I picked up that white chip in August of that year, and through that next year we worked a lot of steps. I don't entirely remember the pacing in my mind. I always, you know, think that it was by 9 months I was done with all of the steps. We talk about in our home group about if y'all do the green chip is the 9 month chip, that's like the least, I'm air quoting that for the recording here, Tim, the least picked up chip. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, I had one person tell me one time that that's not the least picked up chip. It's just that it's the least purchased chip, because not every group gives out a green chip for 9 months. I don't know. In either way, it doesn't matter, but you know, I think my point is that if you get to 9 months, you might as well go for the blue. And if you get to that first blue, you might as well see if you can get another one. Like, what's it going to hurt to keep doing this thing? So we worked these steps, and I'm not going to go through all of the step work. I mean, it looks like, you know, we all know what step work's all about. You know, the hardest one for me was the character defects, 6 and 7. Those are ones that I'm still working to this day. Going through those inventories the first time, the 4th step inventory, I thought, this dude is not going to know half this stuff that I'm talking about. He's not going to relate to it. And you know, we go to meet at his house, and he reads his 4th step to me before I could read mine, essentially. And that put me at some real ease to know that, you know, he's more messed up than I am, so I can get through this. No, it put me at ease to know that the things that I was so worried about telling another person that, you know, this guy's done that. And he's been sober for, I think, at that point, 13 years when I met him. So if he can do it, I can do it. And so we got through all of that work. I did start sponsoring people within that first year. I had a lot of ego wrapped up into that early sponsorship. I wanted to save somebody. I wanted them to, like, be the one chip wonder and, like, say it's because of Wes Thompson, my sponsor, that I'm up here today. I had a lot of ego wrapped up into that. And, you know, thank God has a sense of humor, because that did not happen at all. I worked with a bunch of men before I finally had somebody that I was working with that got some real time. And it never was because of me, and I know that today. I was just a vessel to do the work with, and that's pretty simple. But, you know, in that first year, I had to do some amends. One of the guys I worked for at a restaurant, another restaurant, not Ruby Tuesdays, they were already shut down by this point. At another restaurant that I had worked in for several years, this is where my alcoholism really kind of, like, you know, got its, like, higher level education. This is where I just started doing, you know, substances all day long. I would open up the restaurant and go to the bar before I would even unlock the door for the dishwasher to come in at 9 in the morning. I would go and pour myself a couple of shots and then go open the door to let the guy come in. I had it timed out. The alarm system had a 60-second delay where it would beep, and I could go and pour that first shot and get it down and then go turn that alarm off and then go back and get the second one. And so, I mean, you know, I had it down. I had the rhythm of the disease down, and I owed this guy some money, and I had saved up money in the first year because guess what? I wasn't spending all my money on, you know, handshake drugs and alcohol. I was able to pay this guy back some money. He reluctantly took it. He didn't want it. I talked to some other alcoholics about how to do that because I had a lot of fear about bringing this guy an envelope of money, and I was still working for him. And saying, this is money that I owe you for all the alcohol that I've stolen out of your restaurant over the last 8 years. And you know, I had that money, and I met him at the park in a neutral location, right? I didn't go to the restaurant where he's boss. We met at the park. And, you know, he didn't want it, and I said, if you're not going to take it, man, I'm going to give it to a charity because I'm not going to keep it. And he was a businessman, and his business, you know, could have used the cash influx. So he took it. And I was free, man. I was free. I, you know, more freedom from that act than even from that fifth step. The weight lifted off of me to know that I had done what was right for me and I had done what was right for that guy. It was the best feeling, one of the best feelings I've ever had in my life. Based on that, you know, I felt free from that job. I moved in my second year of sobriety. A buddy of mine opened up a restaurant in Savannah. And he asked if I would come and be one of the sous chefs down there, which is a fancy term for, like, kitchen manager. It is. Sorry if there's any chefs in the house. You know, he asked me if I would come down there, and I said, yeah. You know, and so I moved my life down to Savannah. One of my aunts, when I was preparing for that move, she was like, you know your buddy and his partner, and you know one other employee there that's from your same town, from Gainesville. She said, besides those three people, you're not going to know anybody down there. Are you going to be okay doing that, moving? And this reaction was not me. I turned to her and I said, Aunt Wendy, I said, I'm going to be okay because I will have the AA rooms down there. You know, I'll have all of y'all down there. And that's what it was. Within my first week there, I remember, you know, I had reconned the AA clubhouses down in Savannah before I moved down there because I had traveled back and forth several times before I moved, and I had reconned them, and so I knew some of the people from the AA meeting that I was going to go to, and so within my first week there on my job, this whole group of y'all showed up, like 20 people from the AA meeting, like 9:15 at night. They come into the restaurant and they ask if I'm there, and the manager that wasn't my friend, the other partner was like, how the hell do you know 20 people in this town when you've been here for like 4 days? I said, because I'm in AA, and that's what we do for each other. And so it was just great. You know, I lived down there for only a year. Within that year of being down there, something kind of awakened inside of me that I just felt like I turned 35 when I was down there. Something inside of me was like, are you going to do this when you're in your 50s? You know, do you want to be down in a hot kitchen cooking and doing that when you're in your 50s? And I had to look at that and inventory that and talk about that with my sponsor and other people in the rooms. And you know, I came to the conclusion that for me, that wasn't right. I did not want that life. So I got rid of that apartment I had down there, moved back up to Gainesville, and moved back in with my mom at 35 years old and started going back to community college. Technical college, I suppose, at Lanier Tech up in Gainesville. And I got an LPN license, which is an entry-level license, practical nurse license. And I started working at a nursing home for the same company I work for today. And after having that job for several years, I went back to school, and I've gotten my RN license now. And I'm 2 class credits away from getting my bachelor's degree that I've completed online. And all of that's been, you know, since 2018 is when I got my license for the first time. So I started this school journey back in 2016. So 9 years it's taken me to do that because I've done it one step at a time, one day at a time, you know, just what I can tackle that day. And when I started that process, I remember being in so much fear about it, like, hey, just still egotistical and worried about what y'all think, right? Maybe not y'all, but the people out there, like, I'm 35 living with mom. You know, I had a lot of stuff wrapped up in that, but I was doing what I needed to do to better myself, and I'm 35 going back to school. What does that look like? You know, just sick thinking. You know, I got all of that completed, and I was so worried about, can I do this? Look at how much time this is going to take. And y'all just told me, you said, just do it one day at a time, one piece at a time. And that's been my experience with school, is that I've taken a few years off here and there. It's not been 9 straight years of doing it. It's not been a huge financial burden that was so unsurmountable that I'm like in debt up to my eyes. I'm not in debt at all for any of my education. I applied for federal aid money through the FAFSA program and received those fundings to this day. I still get a little bit every time I register for classes. I applied for some scholarships through my school that they told me about. I didn't know that they had a scholarship program, and they helped me get it paid for. So for that very, very first license that I ever got, I came $0 out of pocket for the whole thing. So I say that, not normally do I say that in my talks, but these things are available to us if we do the work. You know, through those schoolings and all of that stuff, you know, I kept working with that company, Northeast Georgia. At a certain point through this AA journey, you know, I dated, of course. I was single, dated, you know, casually saw people, all of the things that you know, not all of the things that I hear others doing, you know, I did those things. You know, I had this kind of rule, though, that I would not date anybody from the room. I just wouldn't do that. You know, y'all told me that wasn't good. Y'all talked about this ridiculous 13th step thing. And, you know, I saw people that did that, the rehab romances, the hooking up with that, preying on people, really, hooking up with that brand new person, that new woman that comes in with, like, 9 hours of clean time, and I'm there with 4 or 5 years to save them, and it's predatory and it's not right, and I wasn't going to do that. But I am a man, and I did look, and I met somebody in their rooms, somebody that had 9 hours of clean time, and somebody that I was attracted to and I liked and felt a connection with. And that's as far as it went. We had no further conversation for a year. No conversation for a year. And then one day after that year, she came back to that meeting. She had been there during that time, but came back and we started talking. And, you know, we've since gotten married. We've since had a kid. And it's been very nice. But it's been also very, very difficult, because to alcoholics, hooking up and shacking up is not necessarily a recipe for a happy marriage. But we have had a happy marriage. But that does not mean that I haven't had to call my sponsor with my pants on fire, that I haven't had moments of doubt, moments of worry, and all of those trouble things that I believe come with any relationship. But it's acutely more aware to me because it's happening to me. But I think those are normal, I feel like pretty normal things that people go through when they're in committed relationships with one another. There are moments of high glee and moments of sorrow, and everything in between. And I think that's just normal, appropriate human behavior. And I've come to realize that and not be so hard on myself for that, because I want it to be perfect. And I'm a big perfectionist. My sponsor and I, we work the Al-Anon program together as well, because like I told y'all earlier, my father was an alcoholic, and as much as I didn't think that affected and shaped me, it did. It shaped me in ways that are still uncovered. It is what it is. We are products of our upbringing to a large degree, and that doesn't mean that we don't have the choices to change the pattern. Of course we have those choices. We worked that program together too, and that's one that there is no coming back from. There is no line in the sand that says, I have this amount of time, because I relapse in that program all the time. I lose my serenity because of alcoholics in my life every single day, and that's just, it is what it is. for me, you know, to think about the differences between all of that versus what we're doing here in this very much AA, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, are very blurred, because this is all recovery. And this is all, for me, recovery from alcoholism, whether it's my own that I participated in or yours that I was subjected to. That disease is still the same disease, regardless of it, of which fellowship I'm attending. You know, and we call it a disease, and I loved that part in the doctor's opinion where we really just get that medical, this is way before, I loved it before I became a medical professional, but I just loved that that actually makes a lot of sense to think that I have this allergy that I trigger with that very first drink, and that then because of that allergy I have this obsession that means that I'm just going to keep chasing it until there's some physical barrier that stops me from it. And that makes so much sense to me. And I would, you know, extrapolate that medical opinion of this disease to go further to say that it's also a disease because you contract the symptoms and everybody exhibits some form of the same symptoms of it, just like any other disease would. And it's throughout the book they talk about that. You know, you don't want to, you wouldn't get mad at a family member for having cancer, that analogy. And I just relate to that because we are all the same when it comes to these substances, and we are all the same when it comes to alcoholism. The acts of what we do while doing those can be completely different, polar opposites from one another. You may have this whole story of, like, you know, being on paper for 25 years and incarcerated for X amount of years, or you're not a one-chip wonder and you keep struggling with how to find and stay in this program, but the disease is the same. What we do when we're drinking is the same. How it affects us is the same. And that's one of the great equalizers of this program. You know, that's one of the great benefits of coming here, is that we get to meet so many people, you know, different walks of life, but we're all the same. And I think when I was new, I didn't buy into that. I thought maybe there was some line of baloney in all of that. That seemed a little, like, idealistic, kumbaya kind of thing. But, like, now after 11 years of being here, man, I'm a believer. I drank the Kool-Aid, and I know it to be true. Who was it? When Larry got up here, he talked about his road name. He said his road name's Monday. We give ourselves these, you know, we think they're really cool, and they are cool names, right? But my road name is Ripple, which is a Grateful Dead song, which also is a brand of wine, if you're old enough to know that. You know, I got that name because somewhere in my travels, I really, you know, got latched onto a certain style of music and scene where we got to take a lot of different things and do a lot of wild stuff and hear a lot of really cool things. I would like to say that that's, you know, something I'm still able to do in sobriety. I'm able to still go to concerts. I'm still able to go to, you know, I don't because I have a five-year-old, like festivals and things like that, but I'm able to participate in all of those things that I was so worried about not being able to do when I got here. I worked in that restaurant for years after I got sober. 2 days after I picked up my white shift, I had to report in for a bar shift that I was bartending at, and I was able to do that without drinking that night. I asked y'all, I said, how am I supposed to do that? How can I pick up a white ship on a Sunday, it was 3 days later, go in on Wednesday and do that? And, you know, someone said, write down every phone number you've gotten in the last 3 days. Write it on a sheet of paper. Take your big book. Tape the phone list to the big book and put the big book by the register. I mean, that seems pretty simplistic, but that's exactly what I did, because I was terrified to go in there and go behind that bar and pour y'all drinks and not pour myself one. I wasn't sure if I was able to do that, but I was able to do that because I followed the suggestions that y'all laid out for me. Now, I'm not an advocate of saying that someone with 3 days of sobriety should go and get a job bartending. I'm not an advocate of saying that. But I am an advocate of saying that if you come in and you're still employed, don't quit your job on the third day. You know, don't, for me, that was my story. You know, I wasn't going to, you know, just walk away from that. you know, I know that we don't do a lot of, like, suggestions or any of that kind of stuff. Or at least we want to think that we don't do that. You know, I feel like we think we don't make suggestions. We think we don't give advice. And maybe we don't. But, you know, since I've been here, all I've gotten is suggestions and advice from you guys on how to live a sober life. And I followed them. So, you know, it's always an honor to come up here and do this. It's really not my comfort zone to do this. I think I do this about once a year. You know, we have people that speak and they're elegant and they're able to do it, and they do it more often than that. But my track record's been about once a year. I'll come and share my story. And every year it gets, you know, the drunk part of it gets shorter and shorter. The very first time I ever did it, I think I had less than a year, but not quite. Maybe I had over a year. Probably did. And I think I spent the whole time telling you about how I drank. And I realized that that's really not that important. I don't think you guys are going to think that somebody would get up here and tell a story if they weren't really an alcoholic. Like, I don't need to convince you that I was one to come in here and talk to y'all. Because I know in my heart that I was. And I'm very happy to be here. Since Tim's asked me to do this, I've been listening to the bluechipspeaker.org speaker tapes. A couple of years ago, I was working up in Dawsonville for an urgent care, and I got into this habit of listening to, like, speaker tapes on my way in. They're not tapes anymore. Can we call them something different? And I've been got into this habit when I was working at this urgent care of listening to AA audios. There's a good website that has a lot of they're from Iceland, xaspeakers.org. And I've burned through all of theirs in the last, like, 5 years. So I was very happy to, like, finally log into the one that y'all run through this group, and that, you know, have all of these years of people to do it. And it's kind of a cool thing, because this other one that I was into, they're from, like, their groups are in Iceland, and so they're flying, and so they have all the big ones, like Chris Raymer, they have all the Joe and Charlie stuff, they have all these big people on there that have flown over to Iceland that have told their stories, so it's cool to hear them say stuff like, we got to go see the fjords, and I saw, you know, whatever, but it's really cool to hear, you know, people talk about getting sober in Atlanta. And hear the stuff that we do here and give references to what we do around here, because it really brings it back home. And it really is just another layer of proof that we are all the same and that we all do go through the same struggles. Because for so long I wanted to be completely different from everybody. As much as I wanted to fit in and be part of something, I also wanted an identity my own. And this program has given me that identity and so much more. It's given me a life today that, you know, I have to have a few months of notice to go 40 miles from my home to come and speak on an 8 o'clock speaker meeting, because I just have to schedule it nowadays, because it's just the way my life is. And none of that, absolutely none of that is from me. You know, all of that is from you guys and from my higher power. 100%, I believe that. So I appreciate y'all. Thank you. That's it.
Thank God for changing patterns in Kumbaya. Thank you, Wes. And we have asked Lanny to do the chip.
Hey, everybody. I'm Lanny. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Wes. Thanks, Tim. Alex, for the service. I've been asked to do the chips. I don't know if I know all the colors, so I may need a little help. But I do know the white chip. Anybody need to get a white chip tonight? Yeah. 30 days for a silver chip. Woo! 60 days. There we go. About a red chip, 90 days, maybe for 6 months, yellow chip, 9 months, green chip, anybody for years or multiples thereof. All right, Larry.
I'm Larry. I'm from an alcoholic. 14 years ago, I came in here. Get sober. I didn't come in here to find God. I came in here to get the course off my ass and stay out of jail. But while I was in rehab, something happened. I started working with a sponsor. I was sponsoring myself to begin with. I was going to do that 1 year in rehab and go back out. That was my plan. I wasn't looking for God. Me and him had to understand it. I didn't go in his house. He didn't go in mine. Working through the program, working with the sponsors, and discovering the difference between spiritual and religion. That was the problem I had. I knew there was a God. I just didn't want him in my life. But I got a God of my understanding. And my life turned around. 2023, I tried to take it back. And my life started falling apart. He let me take out just enough rope to hang myself. And when I turned it back over to God, things turned around again. I didn't take that first drink. But came close. But I didn't. I did do it one day at a time. I prayed to my higher power every morning, guided me through the day. And at the end of the night, I thank him. I made another 24 hours. And if you got up before 7:30 this morning as a day, you got more surprise than I got.
Anybody else for the...
Hi, my name is Miss. I'm an alcoholic. 4. Woo! So usually I write nothing else because I remember when I picked up my white chip in this room. I don't remember much of anything except for the one day at a time. Trust God, clean house, and help others. And that's it. Thank you guys.
I slip and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me and finally waking there I see. I look into where the promises are.